After he had encountered God, Fat developed a love for him which was not normal. It is not what is usually meant in saying that someone loves God. With Fat, it was an actual hunger. And stranger still, he explained to us that God had injured him and that he still yearned for him, like a drunk yearns for booze. God, he told us, had fired a beam of pink light directly at him, at his head, his eyes. Fat had been temporarily blinded. His head ached for days. It was easy, he said, to describe the beam of pink light. It's exactly what you get as a phosphine afterimage when a flashbulb has gone off in your face. Fat was spiritually haunted by that color. Sometimes it showed up on a TV screen. He lived for that light, that one particular color. However, he could never really find it again. Nothing could generate that color for light but God. In other words, normal light did not contain that color. One time, Fat studied a color chart, a chart of the visible spectrum. The color was absent. He had seen a color which no one else can see. It lay off the end. What comes after light in terms of frequency? Heat? Radio waves? I should know, but I don't. Fat told me, and I don't know how true this is, that in the solar spectrum, what he saw was above 700 millimicrons. In terms of Fraunhofer lines, past B in the direction of A. Think of that what you will. I deem it a symptom of Fat's breakdown. People suffering nervous breakdowns often do a lot of research to find explanations for what they are undergoing. The research, of course, fails. It fails as far as we are concerned, but the unhappy fact is that it sometimes provides a spurious rationalization to the disintegrating mind, like Gloria's they. I looked up the Fraunhofer lines one time, and there is no A. The earliest letter indication that I could find is B. It goes from G to B, from ultraviolet to infrared. That's it. There is no more. What Fat saw, or thought he saw, was not light. Was not light. Was not light. Was not light. Was not light.
To the six, we be in the mix with that rare candy paint job on the whip. I need food for the kids, money for the rent. Fuck a lockdown, baby, I can't do that shit. And I don't never vote, cause I'm fucking broke. And either way, I know the police ain't gon' leave me alone. On a plane by the visit, Glenn Rockney. Crypto told me I should bring the Glock with me. So I packed up my piece and I'm sliding. Cause we might get caught up in a riot. Middle finger Trump, middle finger Biden. Fuck a left, fuck a right, is you riding? Know you love to see it, dudes rocking. Ain't no politics, baby, we just talking. From the birds to the bricks, we be in the mix. With that rare candy paint job on the whip, who you with?
Welcome back to the Gain of Fiction Lab. Here at the Gain of Fiction Lab, we take classic works of fiction, put them under a microscope, then release them as a deadly pandemic to take over the entire country. And today, we are back in the lab, and we're covering Philip K. Dick. This is actually the first Philip K. Dick novel that we've covered, which doesn't feel correct. And it's, you know, we have covered Philip K. Dick. We've referenced him many times. We did two short stories with Jesse when she came on. But this is the first novel that we've covered, and it is one of his most famous books. However, nobody seems to actually, you know, nobody seems to really do long form discussions about it. There's not that many. There's we're covering Valis, right? And our haters love that we're covering something like that. Our haters think we're going to fail covering Valis. I could just tell they think we're going to fail, but, got news for them. We're going to pass with flying colors. But we're talking about Valis, Philip K. Dick, one of his last novels. The last one to come out, I think, while he was alive, if I'm not mistaken. It was written throughout the 70s alongside his Exegesis, which is about 7,000 pages. Valis is, I don't know percentages very well, but I would say 0.00000001% of that length. But he does pack a punch and add a lot of stuff that was in his Exegesis in there. But we have a guest. We have a guest, longtime friend of our RC community, first time guest on the show. We were going to get him on for, I believe, a couple things, but he stepped up to the plate to cover Valis, and I'm really happy. And this is Mac. I'm just going to call him Mac. That's what we call you.
Yeah, Mac. It's fine.
Mac. So you've been around us for a while, been very supportive and all that stuff. But yeah. I've always known that you were good in this type of stuff. You're a very prolific reader. You're always reading some. And for a family man who, we horse around, and you literally horse around.
It is actually my job to horse around professionally.
Yeah. Yeah. We're amateurs.
Yeah. Can we take us to the next level here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a tip. Do it for fun. Okay. When money starts getting involved, things can get a little weird. But yeah, like my wife and I breed and raise horses and sell them. And I wouldn't say that it's technically a money-making venture. You gotta do a couple of different things on the side to make ends meet. But, just any kind of equine related stuff, I'm kind of into it.
Is your wife a horse girl?
Yeah. From the day she was born.
Yeah.
Wow. this is a
multi-generational family legacy.
Yo.
Have you ever sat down and watched Alfred Hitchcock's Marnie with her at all?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that would be a fun one. That's the ultimate horse girl movie. Just gonna say, just a suggestion. It'll be fun. I am sure you are not married to a woman as chaotic as Marnie. I'm just saying it's a very, very funny, very funny movie. If you're like, wow, that they do be like that sometimes. Uh-huh. But anyways, you're literally your horse lover, Mac. That's what I'm calling you for right now. You're a pretty prolific reader, dude. And you're not just like, I remember when you first came across, I kind of thought you were just like a Cormac McCarthy style guy looking for that frontier style stuff. But you like you like woo-woo stuff, man.
I'm all on the woo-woo shit. And that a lot of that comes from my wife specifically. So she's also very into metaphysics stuff.
Sick. Hell yeah.
It wasn't written for our wedding, but we actually had a passage from Marianne Williamson's writing used for our wedding vows.
Whoa.
Just because
I love that.
It was so sick. Just like, she just had like an incredible sort of passage about love and being with someone and like two souls kind of coming together. And we just like thought it was such a beautiful thing. And so I'm into the woo-woo stuff. I'm into like the hyper violent Western stuff. I'm really kind of into everything. And I kind of always have been. I don't really limit myself at all.
No, you and I have the same taste, I think. Like, cause I'm the same way. I love like violent, gritty, like triumphant, like anti-hero Western stuff kind of. And then I love just absolute stream of conscious guy arguing with 15 different personalities in his head. That's my other thing. So it's just, it's good. So I'm glad to have you on, and we have much, much to discuss. Now, how many Philip K. Dick books have you read before this?
This is okay. So as far as books go, I think I've only read Android's Dream of Electric Sheep.
Right.
But I've also read, the one that Total Recall is based on. We can remember it for you wholesale.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
it's a little funky of a title to remember.
All his titles are like,
I know.
Like he went all of his 60s stuff up until Ubik is always like that fence over there. It's weird. I don't know if that's a title of the book. It's like,
or the Policeman's Tears one. What's that one?
Blow my tears. The policeman said,
That's right.
You can tell like even Durandra's Dream of Electric Sheep, you just know like who the screenplay, and that was a long screenplay process. I think there were like a couple iterations of it, of the rights being sold, but the first thing anybody did when they bought the rights was red marker on the title. Yeah, we're going to something else. How about Blade Runner? That sounds way cooler. I know he's very, very but that was a big thing in 60s 70s sci-fi, like Harlan Ellison, I Have No Mouth, I Must Speak. It's very clunky, like very clunky titles, because these guys were just churning them out and they were like, oh, my name sells the book, not what the title is, and I'm selling them to nerds too, and they're nerds, so who cares, right? Like
real quick, I just wanted to say thank you so much for inviting me on the show. This is like a little dream come true. I really appreciate it.
For us too.
Aim higher and dream harder. I'm just gonna tell you that much. But you're welcome. No, this is I'm very happy to have you on, and we still are. Your debut was going to be Roadside Picnic, but dude, you came in relief, and we thank you for this, because And I'm not going to go into it.
We don't need to go
into it. We're not going to go into it. But yeah, and it's not to say you were a replacement, but this was somebody, literally the person that was supposed to come on here suggested it. So it was just, yeah. Which is a great suggestion. It's a phenomenal book. And I've much to discuss for it, but it's like when it's a book and it's planned that far in advance and it gets really scary when the person that was going to come on isn't coming on. And that's railroaded a couple books for us. It's been, but this one, I'm like, it was going to be me. It was the point where I'm like, Cyan, I'll just have to do it then. It's too good of a book and it's too much in the vein of this, but you are going to come on for Roadside Picnic and we're going to do a little Tarkovsky stuff with that too. So that's going to be really fun, eventually, sometime. But, before we get started too, how did you find out about us? I always want to know. People have been around for a long time. Like, 'cause you've been around the sphere for a minute.
Definitely kind of TPN Sabbath, orbit, right? Kind of Sabbath stuff, but also the first episode, I was actually just going through y'all's entire catalog and I was like, when did I first listen to y'all? And I think it was the first Ben Braddock episode was what I listened to, but there could have, I might have listened to a Fed Post guest before that. I just couldn't, you know, we're like 4 years now on from 2020. And so when you're kind of like trying to reach back to that time, things can get a little murky.
Yeah. Right?
When you're trying to kind of remember like, oh, you know, like what was I doing at that time? Yeah. Was I just drinking lots of alcohol? Yes. Yeah. Like what podcasts was I listening to? Yeah. Exactly. And so I think it's one of those. It's either like a Fed Post one or the first Ben Braddock episode.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Shout out to that. 'Cause like the Fed dude, we were on our Valis shit on Fed Post and they didn't the boys were cool, but the some of the fans didn't care much for that. And so it was really funny. But the people who latched on like stayed around forever though, which was really cool. And I was like that, so it was cool like when they that episode was such a pivotal point of the show. So it was really cool when like the fact is like you going like, you know, I we got haters, it's fine, but like and people were like, what the fuck are you guys talking, these fucking retards on, these retards on ever again. I was like, whoa. I was like, yeah, it was wild. So it was just, you know, but there would be people would be like, oh no, that was when I like literally actually subscribed to your guys' show and shit, was because of that. So I was like, that was always really cool. And that's kind of like our thing is like, you know, not everyone's gonna love us, but the people that latch on, they're like, oh, I didn't know something like this existed. So that's very, very cool. So
y'all tapped into something real special for me. Just like, I feel like I'm on the same wavelength as you guys.
No, there's a thing. We're a type of guy and our type of guy hasn't I don't think our type of guy has really done like a full sprawling emptying of thoughts the way that I haven't seen it yet, and I'd like to meet the people so we can link up if that's the case. Or like be like fighting fish where we just kill each other. It might just be like that. Yeah, it might end up being too much of, you know, a Hall of Mirrors situation. That'd be too scary, you know.
On the other hand, I am not denying that Fat was totally whacked out. He began to decline when Gloria phoned him, and he continued to decline forever and ever. Unlike Sherry and her cancer, Fat experienced no remission. Encountering God was not a remission, but probably it wasn't a worsening, despite Kevin's cynical views. You cannot say that an encounter with God is to mental illness what death is to cancer. The logical outcome of the interior illness process. The technical term, theological technical term, not psychiatric, is theophany. A theophany consists of a self-disclosure by the divine. It does not consist of something the percipient does. It consists of something of the divine, the God or gods, the high power does. Moses did not create the burning bush. Elijah on Mount Horeb did not generate the low, murmuring voice. How are we to distinguish a genuine theophany from a mere hallucination on the part of the percipient? If the voice tells him something he does not know and could not know, then perhaps we are dealing with the genuine thing and not the spurious. Fat knew no Cohen Greek. Does this prove anything? He did not know about his son's birth defect, at least not consciously. Perhaps he knew about the near-strangulated hernia unconsciously and simply did not want to face it. There exists, too, a mechanism by which he might have known the Coen. It has to do with phylogenetic memory, the experience of which has been reported by Hume. He terms it the collective or racial unconscious, the ontogeny, that is. The individual recapitulates the phylogeny, that is, the species. And since this is generally accepted, then maybe here lies a basis for Fat's mind serving up a language spoken 2,000 years ago. If there were phylogenetic memories buried in the individual human mind, this is what you might expect to find. But Jung's concept is speculative. No one, really, has been able to verify. Let's get to Valis. There's much to discuss. Let's get there. Again, 1981, Philip K. Dick died the year after it was published, but he had been chipping away at this along with his ex. He basically novelized his exegesis into a trilogy. His exegesis, which is basically his... If Philip K. Dick was to like shoot up a grocery store, he would be like, hey, I have a manifesto. It's 7,000 pages.
I don't. Can you even call it a manifesto?
Yeah, I guess not. But
I call it his ex-wife-a-Jesus, dude. Dude, it's in there, dude.
It is. And yeah. You know, he's a complicated guy. There are so many people who view him as like a prophet, and then there's people that are like, that guy was batshit insane, and both of those things are true. And also Philip K. Dick knew that about himself.
Yeah,
and that's why a lot of his great work in his later part of his career, it comes from pure self-awareness and also self-hate. So it's like self-hate and self-awareness to go, you know, Scanner Darkly is another book where you have two personalities split completely down the middle into two separate people. Mm-hmm. And just like almost like something under a microscope watching it happen. And it's dealing with a lot of like this yin yang part of yourself, but not realizing that the other one exists until like halfway through the book, I guess the coming to realization. So that's exactly what's happening in Valis here. Valis is centered around, you first hear it. It's told in first person by a science fiction author. Doesn't say his name for a while, but you kind of get the idea that it's Philip K. Dick that's talking about this. But he's talking about his friend and kind of like the time that he spent with this crazy guy that we're not quite sure what happened to him, but we don't think it's very good. But it's he's talking about his friend named Horse Lover Fat. Now, somebody who's into Greek etymology would know right away that Horse Lover Fat is basically Philip K. Dick in the ancient Greek, because there was some kind of Phil something name that goes with lover of horses. And then Fat is basically Dick.
I think it's German for Dick.
Is it German? Okay. Yeah. The other side is. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So it's basically, I would never have picked that up, but if somebody was like just this linguistic nerd, like they would know right away. I guess it would give it away, but also he gives it away at the beginning, so it's not the mystery of the book is this the same guy. He says at the same time, and I mean Horse Lover Fat, he says that like right at the beginning of the book, so you understand that you're a little bit more aware of what's going on than the narrator, although the narrator knows, but he just hasn't come to terms with it yet.
And it would have sucked if that was the whole, like, you know, that's beneath him. I think
he's a master of mystery, and people just don't realize this. He is a mystery writer. He's a science fiction literary mystery writer, and he came up when he was coming up in the Bay Area as a writer after his high school years. He wrote, and I am not going to get this guy's name because I just didn't remember it, and I never looked into any of his work, but he was really, really inspired by this Oakland mystery writer that was kind of like a mentor to him. And the guy was just kind of a local guy, made a living just like selling locally and writing in like Oakland local magazines back when that was a thing. Mm-hmm. And that really helped him throughout his books, because his books are genuinely shocking when you get to the twists a lot of times, like Ubik and Scanner Darkly and even some of his short stories. And the way that he kind of, you know, just covered Friends of Eddie Coyle, but the way that that you can tell something's being withheld within the dialogue of the characters, and it slowly trickles out, and then you're now a part of it all, and it's a thrill. It's actually a thrill. But that, again, that is not the twist of the book. It's not that this is actually the same guy. It's that you're watching, like, there's a Stephen A. Smith meme
that where Stephen A. Smith of ESPN is look, and you can use it to reply to somebody that's saying something stupid. It says, take a look, y'all. We watching real mental illness. And that's like essentially what's happening here. But it blurs the line. There's mental illness, and then there's prophecy. And then there's people that are extra sensitive to information that the rest of us don't have access to. And before I go super hard into the plot, what was everyone's just overall impression of the book? Sai, I want to hear you first.
Yeah, the number one thing that stuck out to me was his self-awareness that he's crazy. Oh, yeah. He's clearly like obviously on some hyper level of awareness where he knows he's insane. And also it's just like he kind of embraces his patheticism. It's just like, oh, I'm just a fucking loser, you know. That's the whole vibe until the end when like the horse liver fat's like falling out of control. And that I think that's interesting. But yeah, that was the main thing where he's clearly knows what's going on within him, but isn't somehow motivated enough to, I don't know, he has no way to get to the bottom. He's kind of resigned to his condition, right? And is kind of he knows there's no one else is experiencing this the way he is. So he's just resigned to the whole condition of the thing, basically. But yeah, I also think it really picks up in the second half too. Especially with the rock stars and everything. Like that's really, like really fun part of it. And
yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah,
and just how, I love that part because I love the whole thing. I mean, I don't want to jump it that far. Maybe I'll save my takes for when we get to that.
Sure. Yeah. Part. Yeah. Just overall stuff with it. Like just kind of your reading experience with it. No, you're.
I also just thought I want to like give it, let's just make friends with like a pastor and like, hey, read this. And just he'll be like, interesting. Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of good Christ stuff in there. Like really good stuff that you know is on par with anything I've heard from like a real theology person. Like it's totally. Not that I like totally respect some like, you know, guy who graduated in theology, but I just mean he's not just like blabbering. Like there are parts of it that are just blabbering, and the tone and the pacing of it can be blabbering, but that's like when you're trying to figure out something about yourself, it's not coherent a lot of times. So Mac, your impressions.
This is definitely the most difficult book to explain the plot to someone to that I've ever come across. Just trying, they're like, oh, what are you reading? Oh, this book, Valis, it's by Philip K. Dick. It's and then I just kind of stop for a second and I'm like, it's about a guy and he gets shot in the face with like some pink light and but it's not actually that guy. It's a different guy. He's the same, you know, and it just like, it kind of just stops me in my tracks. It's really hard to sort, but when you read it, it gets its hooks in you so fast. And it really, I think when I first started reading it, I said in the Discord that this is like one of the most challenging books that I've ever read. And I think it is the most challenging book that I've ever read. Because it's like I'm not like a super religious person. I'm like interested in it, and
yeah,
there's like so many of these like little things and like these conversations, and I know we're gonna get all into it and everything, but like when you're trying to just figure out who's narrating at what time, like is it Horse Lover Fat, is it actually Philip K. Dick, is it like a simulacra of Philip K. Dick? I don't know. It's just sort of like, it's wild, man. This is like the wildest shit I've ever read in my life.
It is crazy.
And it's so cool.
Yeah. My mom's in town and I was trying to explain it to her. And I was just like, oh, I sound so dumb right now. This is just, I was like, oh yeah.
I know.
Tongue tied. Like, I just can't get it out.
Yeah. Well, and so, if I were to explain it to someone, you could just go like, I'll read the first paragraph on Wikipedia. And it's like, it's kind of tells you what's going on. But even then you'd be like, you wouldn't know. So it says the first mistake they make in the first sentence is this: Valis is a 1981 science fiction novel. I don't think this is a science fiction novel. Yeah. I truly don't like if this is science fiction, Thomas Pynchon is science fiction. Like that's just the way, like then I understand marketing, right? I understand marketing. Philip K. Dick is prolific in the genre of science fiction. Just to sell a book, you will say because there are kind of these divine things happening and there's a beam of light that's giving information, you could say, yeah, well, that's sci-fi. It's like, ah, I don't know if that's true, because I can imagine this average science fiction fan picking this up and going, oh, is this horse shit? You know, horse shit fat. This horse sucks. Yeah, shit. Yeah. This shit sucks, because it's true. Like, and these are these things that like kind of fall. I was talking about it on the last one, Gain of Fiction, The Friends of Eddie Coyle, where it's like a lot of people, you know, genre. I love genre fiction, but a lot of times genre fiction, it can sell well within the genre, but you can get negative reviews within the genre if it's not like hard whatever within the genre. But then also the people that need to read it, fans that are fans of like literary stream of consciousness fiction, aren't going to pick up science fiction a lot of times. And well, that's why I say stop being fake and gay. Find good writers and read everything they've ever written. That's be a completionist. Like, be a Philip K. Dick completionist. Now, I will say, if you are going to pick this book up, I think it really, really helps to either A, listen to our friends Art of Darkness. They've done a really, really good deep dive into Philip K. Dick's life, a really good core episode they did there. I actually listened to an biography. There's many biographies of Philip K. Dick, but I listened to one and it was really cool because it was very all over the place. Like, the time he would jump back and forth on time all the time, which made it really weird, because you're like, oh, are we already done with this time period? And then he would return to it. But that's kind of what Valis is. Like, Valis, you're like, I don't know when these are happening, right? Like, it sounds like a recollection at the beginning, and then they're in like real time half the time. But also, we have to find out what time is, and that's kind of what Valis is about, is it, what is time? And so yeah, Horse Lover Fat, right? We're hearing about the plight of Horse Lover Fat through his friend who spent some time with him, who is a prolific science fiction author. And Horse Lover Fat had just lost, he had gotten divorced and he had lost his female friend. Now, if he had listened to Rare Candy, he'd understand that he could save himself some time, that you can't have female friends because, at you know, sometimes they'll just throw themselves off a roof, you know, and go crazy. So, you know, we could have fixed him, but I'm glad we didn't, because we got a really, really cool, you know, catalog from him. But yeah, his friend named Gloria. Gloria was a drug addict, and she calls Horse Lover Fat and says, I'm going to kill myself, which is what you do with your lady friends. It's really fun. They love when you do that. Yeah. And then and he's like, hey, no, don't. You're so sexy. Like, he does that. He does that like whole thing. And
I'm going to be so sad if you do that.
Yeah, please don't. And she's like, well, give me some drugs, because it's all bad. And she's a drug addict. So is Horse Lover Fat. It's very much in the vein of Scanner Darkly. Everybody is cranked out. Like, they are just yacked out on amphetamines. Like, Philip K. Dick had like a Hitler regimen, but was cooler than Hitler. Like, his he was very, you know, this was his art, right? Which was better. And then he was on amphetamines the whole time. And
they said it on the Art of Darkness episode. But it was like a shocking amount of money at like towards the end, you know, before he sort of calmed everything down, which, you know, too little too late for that. But it was something like $2,000 or $2,500 a month in late 70s dollars just on speed. And that is like, that's a lot of fucking money.
Well, and it's a weird thing, because it's weird. That money is a lot back then, but also authors made more money than they do now. So like that guy, he was like richer than like an author is now. even like a pretty prolific author right now. I'm sure there could be people that fact check me, but he was able to basically just get absolutely zonked out on amphetamines and just write and make all his money.
Probably subsidize it by that publisher. He's like, no, dude, here, keep.
Bantam. I love that. Books for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just PKD in like a rap video, like live like a rock star. Looking bands and just typing
at 4:15 in the morning, just fucking like just absolutely out of your mind. But yeah, it's such a shock, because like you could tell he's like, ah, she's always talking like that. She's not going to kill herself. And then her glorious husband calls Horse Lover Fat and is like, hey, dude, she killed herself. Now, they had been divorced, so it was kind of not like, oh, my gosh, my wife killed myself. It was, she finally did it.
Yeah.
And also, you know, Horse Lover Fat's wife had left him with their son. And it is Horse Lover Fat's down bad. He's not. He's not doing so hot. He tries to kill himself, and that does it.
Talents, dude.
He tries to kill himself. He takes it. What doesn't the seatbelt save him? Like the weird seatbelt system, like save him or something. Sai's dad would be like, "Fuck this."
Anti seatbelt guy,
dude. He's like, "Yeah, bullshit." Seatbelt, big seatbelt. Propaganda.
He was like 17. He got T-boned in an intersection and like wasn't wearing a seatbelt, so it moved him all the way to the passenger side of the truck. And ever since then, he's like, nope, not wearing these.
And to be fair, it's not what took him out.
Nope.
He never actually suffered from not wearing a seatbelt. So
exactly.
It makes you think. But so he, he takes a bunch of pills. I think he cuts himself too, right? He goes hard, dude. He went like Owen Wilson mode. Like,
this is if I'm not mistaken, this is actually how Philip K. Dick tried to commit suicide.
No, this book
like is in real life.
No,
like
there's so much reality in this book. Like that's
another crazy thing about trying to explain what this book is. You're like, it's a quasi autobiography.
Yeah.
Cause like some real shit actually happens and it's some of the craziest shit in the book.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, because you're like, it's not really science fiction, like it's auto fiction. And, again, I hate even trying to characterize it like in anything. Just pick it up. It's really cool and just go into it with an open mind. But his son had a when he's going through his like manic episodes at the beginning, Horse Lover Fat talks about his son needing a hernia surgery, and his son, nobody knew what was wrong with the son. He was real sluggish and in pain, and he was like, he has a hernia and he's gonna need surgery. Obviously Horse Lover Fat's not a doctor to do that, and that happened in real life, by the way. But it's funny because this is where you get the conflict of what PKD was as a person. Now he had claimed to say, well, I had a Valis type deity god beam that information to me that my son had a hernia and is going to need help. And then other people like his wife and then like even PKD at times would say, oh yeah, I was just like reading up and like random things like for a book about like medical stuff, and I was like, oh, my son's exhibiting these symptoms, and then took him to the emergency room. They're like, dude, you did that. Like, I don't understand why you think you got this like cosmically beamed into you. So there's
wife was jealous, dude. Jealous.
It's definitely some hater shit. Like, it's like, oh yeah, of course, yeah, you're right, you know. But so that stuff actually happened. So they're after he kills himself, he's in the psych ward, or tries to kill himself. He's in the psych ward.
Hey, real quick, before we go too far past this point, there was I wanted to get an RC take on one part about this book, and it's Gloria Knudsen and her apparent psychosis from taking too much LSD and listening to too much Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
I'm
gonna call Scott real fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, no, but the thing is, right, is that like I feel like that was almost kind of like a trope, right, of this idea of like, oh, taking too many psychedelics and they went crazy.
Yeah.
Versus like taking too many pharmaceutical drugs. And
for sure, there's different
pharma
bros don't fuck with like psychedelics a lot of times. Like they really don't. Like they're kind of. But also, I do believe that women shouldn't be taking large quantities of acid. Like it's just not for them. Like I don't know, they're too sensitive. Like they I don't know. Some chicks can do it, I guess, but I've known a couple that just like one little small thing of shrooms, and they like they had to go to like the psych ward and stuff. Like it's just no. I mean, it's just it's a thing. Maybe that's what happened. But yeah, like Gloria was like always gonna kill herself though. Like she was just like, oh yeah, I'm just like gonna kill myself. And just the fact that it actually happened and having it be so blunt and having that just be this thing you cannot. The whole part of this book before Horse Lover Fat gets the clarity that he needs. Is about trying to rationalize why a girl just killed herself and why his other friend has cancer. So he's kind of just like, why is this happening? Like, why, if there is a God, if there is what I've been taught through the Episcopalian church or where, however I was raised, I should have, why did this woman go down this path? Like that, what is, it's nihilism. What is the, what am I supposed to learn from this? And now, you know, again, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff that he talks about in here, but it is super interesting. And there is some crossover there to the stuff that I do believe, but yeah, that's that you're right. I do remember that part, but I'm like, she probably was frying her brain pretty
good. Sorry to interrupt. It's just that I got it written down here in my notes and I'm like, I don't want to get too far away from it. Like,
oh, please, please. I want to hear it all. Cool. I want to hear it all. Yeah. Yeah. This book is kind of has like this meta thing. This is a book about time and reality. And then you're like, I don't even know how to cover this book linearly. Like you can't, like it's, I can't just go like, here this happened, so you're gonna jump around because the book jumps around. So it's like, hey, anybody who gets anything, just just shout it out. Like, because I'm like, I got nothing.
And the events that happen in the book are like constantly being brought up throughout the entire book. Like, it's not like, even though it takes place over like a long period of time, like Gloria's suicide is like a constant beat.
Sherry's cancer. Always,
exactly.
What else can you tell? Dr. Stone said. Fat said, time does not exist. This is the great secret note to Apollonius of Tyana, Paul of Tarsus, Simon Magus, Paracelsus, Bohme, and Broom. The universe is contracting into a unitary entity which is completing itself. Decay and disorder are seen by us in reverse as increasing. Entry 18 of my exegesis reads, real time ceased in 70 CE with the fall of the Temple of Jerusalem. It began in 1974. The intervening period was a perfect spurious interpolation aping the creation of the mind. Interpolated by who? Dr. Stone asked. The Black Iron Prison, which is an expression of the Empire. What has been... Fat started to say. What has been revealed to me, he rechose his words. What has been most important in my discoveries is this. The Empire never ended. Leaning against his desk, Dr. Stone folded his arms, rocked forward and back, and studied Fat, waiting to hear more. That's all I know, Fat said, becoming belatedly cautious. I'm very interested in what you're saying, Dr. Stone said. Fat realized that one of two possibilities existed, and only two. Either Dr. Stone was totally insane, not just insane, but totally so, or else, in an artful, professional fashion, he had gotten Fat to talk. He had drawn Fat out and now knew that Fat was totally insane, which meant that Fat could look forward to a court appearance in 90 days. This is a mournful discovery. 1. Those who agree with you are insane. 2. Those who do not agree with you are in power.
So yeah, in the meantime, Horse Lover Fat has his bros, dude. Thank God for the bros, dude. Mm-hmm. They say he, if it wasn't for the bros, it is the boys get active in this book.
You just listened to a preview of one of our premium episodes, and to get access to the full thing, you got to be a paid subscriber to the Rare Candy Substack. That's rarecandy.substack.com. It's only $5 a month or $55 for the whole year. You get 1 month free if you do the whole year. You get access to premium Rare Candy episodes, my podcast, The Glenn Word, and whatever the hell else we want to charge people for. Again, that's rarecandy.substack.com. Thanks again.